It is the first Sunday of the last month of 2024. We are on the Sunday show with Neil De Beer, the president of the United Independent Movement. Welcome back, Neil.
Yeah, Chris, good Sunday. Feels a bit empty not being able to congratulate a national team, but I think there's many games still to come. But a great Sunday. Unbelievable that we are on the 1st of December and we are nearly at the end. It feels like you and I have been doing this for ages. And Chris, may I say, second week now in the running of more than 100,000 views a week. I just wanted to say thank you to everybody, every comment. We can't get to it, but 100,000 a week now, this little show really proving itself to be a medicine of truth, a matter of fun, and something which our people are looking forward to. So to them, I just wanted to say thank you so much. And we won't stop, Chris, in actual fact. Probably you will announce at the end of the show a surprise of what's happening in shows to come. But it's always a massive humbling matter to see the response thing. And thank you for you for giving me the opportunity and the people to listen. That's as good as a spin dot score.
Neil, it is also the first anniversary of former President Jacob Zuma's MK Party. Now, the critics are saying their political agenda is one of avoiding criminal responsibility and getting back into power so that they can loot again, this time under the guise of radical economic transformation. What do you say?
Yeah, why change something that's not broken? I mean, Chris, the mutation, and I'm bloody well not going to say happy birthday, Samur. I am very clear. The absolute structure, the build-up to the MK Party has come long before this year. So I refute the fact that it's a one-year celebration. This has been long and coming. But Jacob Delihlehle, Umsholozi Zuma, must not be heralded as the brain behind this. Because there's a far bigger picture lying behind the ambient of the now camouflage uniformed members of parliament. This is something bigger than. There's a bigger plan than we know. Some of it is obvious. Some of it is being placed on the table and being shown to us. But very, very, very strategic. They let a couple of people go out of parliament and up till date. Interesting, Chris, there's more than 10 seats not filled yet again after they removed and purged the previous one. So one can only wonder, for whom are those seats destined? I'm being kept very warm. And one interesting thing, Chris, that I've noted, and you've probably seen it, it is, let's say, 2 years still to go before the 2026 local government election. I predict it would be July, August 2026. They're campaigning. They have hit the campaign trail, like it is 3 months before elections. Because this party is undoubtedly hungry, obsessive, strategic, very well funded, and without a doubt, filled with strategy. And they are marching on. The rest of us are canoeing, getting stuff to still settle just to understand what is the canoe in a vision, who's on the canoe, who's fighting the canoe. And they are already campaigning for 2026. And this is the thing that makes a person sit back and go, are we really ready? Are we really on par with what this party, with all its might, is doing? And then to fulfill your question, that boat that NK boat is filled with a absolute huge mixture and cabal of people that come out of the dark, come out of clouds of absolute horrendous accusations, people that were already tried and found guilty, and the ship is full of these people. So if you look what I said previously, the strategy of number one, getting someone that is a constitutional legal specialist like Shlope to understand the law and to attack the constitution continually, to get a person that will settle the structures nationally, Floyd Chiwambu, and to ensure that it understands the economic intricacy of all SOEs and state departments, the Brian Malefes of the world. Then what they do is they need to have a sporadic group of radicals that sit there and attack the people radically, and then to conform them all for a strategic takeover of government. This is becoming more and more a reality, and I fear our opposition is not geared for it.
Quite, and the EFF, the Economic Freedom Fighters, are feeling the power of MK. They suffered another high-profile defection of an MP in the past week, Neil. But at the same time, it launched its Concord bid to try and hold President Cyril Ramaphosa accountable for the dollars stuffed in his couch. The president, who is now also becoming known as the couch potato president for his lack of action. Do you think this will breathe new life into the EFF, or is it doomed to become a one-man party because of MKP?
Chris, I don't think it has ever not been a one-man party. I think people must look past the facade of Juju, and they've got to look at Julius Malema directly and understand he is a dictator. That is it. He allows people to act in his court as the court jesters, and, you know, one by one they are leaving, if they are not leaving it the paycheck. But they have to get something called relevance, Chris. Now, let me explain. I've not been an astute politician. I've been in politics actively now for 3 years, but I take a lot of info very quickly. I suck it up like you can't believe. And no Kirby can stand my integrated ideology once I focus on it. So I can regurgitate it in the simple fashion of the following. Every political party, every politician needs to remain relevant. If they lose relevancy, their time is gone. Now, let us look at the EFF's stages and phases of relevance. When they burst onto the scene, it was the ex-youth leader of the ANC challenging the establishment, basically being thrown out of Luthuli House. Him and a couple of cohorts, Floyd and Ndlozi, all leaving and starting this new party, which actually was the capture of the Youth League of the ANC that made them relevant. The fact that they were rebels. They then had to mutate and find a cause. Their cause, plain and simply, was RET, land, nationalization. That was the scream. That gave them power. And the youth of those days followed him because they said, yes, the ANC is starting to become mediocre. This is the new revolution. This is the new Che Guevara. This is the guy. And they grew. They went up to 10, 11%. But then suddenly there were cracks in the fold. VBS came in. There was talks of power play within it because you can't challenge the king and the dictator. And cracks started to form. And then, Chris, boom, MKP comes to the fray. And strategically, the MK party takes the total ideology of the EFF away from them and now becomes the new revolutionary party. Now, there sits Malema. He loses Floyd. He's losing the rest and he's waiting for Ndlozi to go, which are the founding members of the EFF. And now he has to choose a new target. He has to become relevant because his marches aren't, his RET isn't, his people are leaving him. What does he choose? Well, he now focuses on what we call our own Watergate. It's Ramagate. The pala pala is Ramagate. That now comes to the fro. And what does he do? He says, no, he and ATM, weirdo, ATM, good word for a party, eh? ATM. They decide that the Constitutional Court, the apex court of South Africa, is now their new bastion to become relevant. So they go to court, Chris, and they say that the vote that was taken in the National Assembly, I'm just making complexity simple, Atmut, Wallace Makleka, they now say that the vote that was taken by the National Assembly against the impeachment of our Ramagate, that it is absolutely unconstitutional because it says, and yet, Chris, whoa, forget about the red overall. Let's talk about merit. They're not off. Sorry, they're not off. We have to admit this. Their case that they put to the apex court, which I watched with interest, wasn't wrong. So, we have to take that bitter pill because the merit says, how can a report of a judicial commission that comes back and says clearly that Rama has a case to answer? That was the outcome of the global inquest. It says that there is absolutely prima facie evidence that the president of this country flaunted the law. That's clear. It then goes to parliament, and through a process of politics, parliament rejects that there must be a further commission now of inquiry. And what they're saying in court is, this is a travesty of justice to the rights of the people of South Africa getting justice. That's their case. That's what they put on the floor. Chris, now, sorry, take the red barons away. As a citizen, we have to now sit and go, yeah, that's true. No matter the law, the sub judice, the de facto, and the prima facie, leave the Latin out. Citizen X, I can say, you and me, I agree. I absolutely agree that we, the people, must have the absolute clear comfort that if a president has committed a felony, a crime against government and the Constitution, that he, as per the preamble of the Constitution, is equal to the law. Is equal to the law. No one may be above or under the law, Chris. We are equal to the law. Jy en ek. So Rama, jy ook, you too. You must be equal to the law. So therefore, this case, although now making the guys in red prominent, it actually satisfies me because I and you shared that opinion. So the apex court, the constitutional court, has listened and it has taken its judgment on revisement. And I can't wait for that outcome. Chris, it's time. It's time that Ramagate does not just affect and touches that man on the couch. And we'll talk about the craziness of that now. And that we must make sure that no matter whom you are under the law. And I can't bake.
Meanwhile, over at the Government of National Unity, Neil, how effective do you think it has been in forcing African National Congress ministers to become more responsive to the needs of their constituents?
Oh, very good. Because if you look at the understanding now of the new rules, can I see the new guidelines that was agreed to in the GNU discussions, it has totally gone against the grain, against the flow of how the ANC has operated, not for 30 years, but for its total existence of more than 112 years. And how does that work? It works from top to bottom. It is a command system from the NEC that goes down to the branches, the provinces, etc. It formulated the same ideology as the Kremlin, basically. Because if you look at our system, we are still based in the ANC, according to what the communists and the working class, Busatu, and the people that are from that era. So it works on an NEC collective basis system and then spreads down the command. In other words, that word called cadre deployment. You are deployed. And where you are deployed, you will work according to what the ANC says. And that's how they functioned in cabinet. The president's the president. He gives the direction. They follow those commands and absolutely did not have to comply to answer to anybody except to the president and then to the NEC. The GNU changed that. And it didn't just change that in attitude. It actually put a paper out to its own members. And here's the critic. Chris, you can see, I don't know if it's only me that's noticing it, there is a change of cabinet ministers now reporting, kind of, to the public. And the words they use is governance. In other words, there should be better governance within the ministries that are there. The next word that was used is transparency. You have to be more clear and transparent. Ooh. Third one, community liaison. Ooh. Wow. More access of ministers to communities. And the last one was the effective driving of the KPIs of ministers. Four words that I must tell you in 30 years I did not see. So the ones that snapped at it, and not because they're better or not because they are not ANC ministers, was the, call it DA, the opposition GNU members coming in and using a tool which the ANC was afraid of, and that is social media. That is going on X, Twitter, that's going on Facebook, that's going on Instagram, that's going there and showing people more and more access to what they're doing, reporting more and more. Now, if you look at a person like Leon Schreiber, he is 16 times a day, you can see, in posting matters. Another one is Dean McPherson, who continually goes to radio shows. And now you can even see Minister Mchulu, you can see people coming in and the Ministry of Police becoming relevant. The minister that we are going to talk about later, Ramaphosa, of energy, who is transparent. So, yeah, there is a change. I like that. I like that. They're not there yet, but it is a clear change in the ideology that ministers must be more accessible, transparent, communicate better, and get involved in communities. And if we go on with that trend, I'm not too dissatisfied because that one word, you know, that I always scream even at 2 a.m, accountability. And I think if we get that right, we can have a government for now, in place for now, that we can talk to. And I'm happy about that.
Let's deal with one of those ministers. You've just mentioned him, the electricity minister. His push for renewable energy projects. Neil, is he now mirroring the strategies advocated by former CEO André de Ruyter?
Yes, he is. Absolutely. And Chris, you will remember, you and I had the privilege of sitting in a presentation of the current chairman of Eskom, Mr. Nyati. And what is clear is when he spoke about where Eskom was, where it is and where it's going, it's chalk and cheese of the old attitude of Eskom. And I will remind the people that what you and I heard, and I remember in that talk, you and I looked at each other many times with either a huh or a huh. And one of the statements that was made, and I got a feeling that André de Ruyter is not missed at Eskom for various reasons. But the ghost of de Ruyter, will never go away. It's cast in stone, it's written in book. So we can attack him as much as what we can. But now that I have read a couple of submissions of the de Ruyter era and the era of de Ruyter, funny enough, it's a copy and paste now what Ramaphosa is saying. And what is Ramaphosa saying? Ta-da! As if it's a surprise, Eskom must now invest in alternative energy. Gits. Nie geweet nie. Really? That's been propagated now for 15 years. But when I go back to Nyati's statement that cannot be denied, he said, the first thing we needed to do was to stabilize the grid. We had to provide the power necessary. We had to get in the management that we could actually take Eskom to the future. We had to look at where we were bleeding. We had to provide, therefore, a stable grid. And Chris, funny enough, the word load shedding, I don't hear it anymore in the day. Someone said to me, Neil, we've had so many days out of load shedding. I said, really? That's like complimenting a kettle for boiling bloody water. So sorry, I can't give compliments for something that's your job, but well done. Hurrah. That's just doing your job. But Nyati said, let's stabilize the grid. Once we stabilize it, let us provide sufficient energy. And then, Chris, what did he say? He said, then we need to go into the direct competition with people that are coming up with innovative sources of power. Now, Ramaphosa gets up as if this is a new growth of a pot plant, and he says, Pat Peter City, we've now got parsley. Yeah, because we don't. We've always bloody had it. You're just waking up. Give him credit, though. We must give credit where due. He is saying that the future is renewable energy. Chris, I'm not an expert. We are just giving the regurgitation of the week that was. This sporadic growth now of the ideology that the minister wants to focus now. They have problems. They've got grid problems because if you take energy and you create solar or wind or energy or hydro energy, you have to plug it in somewhere, Chris. And apparently, on the analysis is what I've got last week, and you and I got it, there's a grid problem. They have to capacitate it. Secondly, and I laugh in this one document segment, it said that there was a fear that renewable energy was driven by white minority capital. This is in the document. And I said to myself, yes, sir, ek geweet die witters besit die son, die water, we are a mighty group of people. What a lot of rubbish. You see, Chris, this is the scenario that you could racialize even power. Now, this is an inept problem in this country, that if we find a problem, the last degree card that you pull out is race. Ach, hou nou op, man. You know, we get criticized in this program sometimes when we say, we just criticize the black minister. We just criticize the black this. Neil, you must understand that. Did you forget you were in the ANT? Hey. It's not about the color of your skin. It's got absolutely nothing to do with the pigmentation of your skin. It's got to do with competency. It's got to do about relevance. I don't want to shock the people. We might lose people right now, never coming back to this show again. But I'm going to make a statement. Ikomai. Fatom, not every bloody thing on earth is black and white. Not every bloody argument on earth is black and white. Not every disagreement on earth is black and white. Not every attitude is black and white. Not every indefensible mistake is black and white. It's human. You're a human. I pray the day that one day we will have an argument, an intellectual one, where race is not the argument, but the validity of your bloody point. And that's the problem, Chris. Until we can't move away from the past and agree that we have a hurt past, but a beautiful future. And don't drag race into solar power. It's just not going to happen. So yeah, I'm absolutely happy that we are steering into the possibility that the old coal-driven power plants and the nuclear substance and all that, which I'm not an expert, is going to come to the fore to make sure that we have excess capacity power, because excess capacity power can rejuvenate industry in this country. And boy, do we need a rejuvenation of jobs in this country via industry. And I pray for that day.
Neil, talking about industry, the Vodacom Remgro merger controversy and the DTIC minister's unusual appeal against the competition tribunal's rejection of it. How do you interpret that?
12 chameleons on 16 smarty boxes and they don't know what color to go. Yo, Mensa. I mean, what a combination, firstly, of people. You've got Vodacom, which we can't deny is a bullish, huge company within the fold of this country's Econic. You've got Remgro, backed by the Ruperts. Remgro, also quite a substantial company. You then have Remgro, who has an interest in a company called Mazi, M-A-Z-I-B, Mazi, and they are connected to two other entities that provide fiber, that provide connectivity. Now, Chris, I think you and I are one of the multitude of people in this country that always debate two things. Many a time when we go off the show, I have to sit with you to wait for this program to load. And that gives us our joke moment when me and you can skinner and talk about everybody off record. But we do it because at times when we upload this fascinating show, it takes time. And then me and you will quickly debate every Sunday, why is it taking so long? So, one, I know that we are not alone about the people saying the fiber connectivity, the upload capacity and download capacity of our internet is slow. And we're always moaning, why can't it be faster? And the second one is the price for data. Our data prices, no matter how they juggle it, it's still high. For a gig, you pay X, and in other countries, you don't. So those are the two modes that we've got. Here comes a company that says, do you think that you moan and groan and there's no solution? Nay, nay. Nay, nay. We've got a solution. So they come up with a solution where they say, we will form a merger between the Remgro entity and one of the big powerhouses in data and in connectivity in this country, Vodacom. We will form a group and we will invest 10 billion rand on the first tranche. We will connect, Chris, we will connect through this merger 1 million households on our first phase rollout. We will then further by a further 15 billion rand investment. And then, ta-da, yes, not a, sounds like a very mark. Here it comes. And if you buy now, I say, no good, dan kry jy 'n offer. Listen, they say, and not only that, we will give 10,000, here it is, 10,000 people jobs in this country. Better fiber, quicker fiber, cheaper connectivity, 25 billion investment in infrastructure, and 10,000 jobs. Oh, hold on. Hey, you know, Dorf, grab it. Take it. And then comes the competitions tribunal. No. we are not going to do this and we're not going to allow it. I bet you everybody in Remgro and Vodacom at the same time went, huh? We're giving you all of this and you say no. Chris, then the competition tribunal says the reason why is if you and Remgro do this, you will just stifle the competition. You will inhibit all the other companies from doing what you are doing. Yeah. Dan Moura se koeksisters op die hoek van de Wetstraat, nee, is the best koeksisters you can get. Now, then I'm very sorry for Tani Anniki, Sofia en Tani Marta. Julle koeksisters is nie so goed soos jy daai nie. So now she must be stopped from making koeksisters. That is to the infinity. That's ridiculous. So now, shocker. Enter the room. This is like Macbeth. Enter the room, Department of Trade and Industry. And Minister Patel goes, are you mad? So the expected minister who we thought would go with the competitions tribunal, because they normally do, because they stifle business, control business. No, Patel goes, I agree with Remgro and Vodacom. I will now, as DTIC, appeal. Yeah, kom nog een en nog een appeal. We will appeal with you against the competitions tribunal. Just this is another circus. Am I the only one with you that says, how can you, no matter what, stand back and not allow Citizen X to get the benefit? It doesn't matter how big they are. It doesn't matter what it will bring into the industry. Well, I'm sorry. Kelsey, MTN, lach jy gehad. Then you get out. You go get yourself a partner. You go get yourself money and compete. Isn't that what it's about? So just because you came up with an innovative idea and we came up with the best biz news show that the globe has ever seen, yay and act, now, you know, people must tell us that we got to get stifled. Nay, nay, we're going to go bigger. So I am absolutely safe that there must come a decision, and you can see this has gone to an appeal now, where they say, must the country's current fiscal and industrial growth not be allowed to expand, not to the detriment of others, but to the positiveness of society's allowance to gain that kind of product? So the weighing up of balance, because this is going to be a huge case. I say, in actual fact, that this case is going to send a big message for the future, because the MD of Vodacom said, obviously very much to the negative, and I think saddened and upset, he says that future mergers and acquisitions, that future foreign direct investment into this country, into these kind of absolutely stunning competitional-driven scenarios, must be challenged. And he says he's worried that if this thing sinks, this could have a major problem, not just on the industry or giving access to things that we need, but to people wanting to come into this country and actually say it's not worth it, because if we buy into merge with other bigger companies, the consequence is going to be the same. And I don't think this is right. We have to balance it out. At this current moment, I think this is needed. I think we need to look at the other principle and let it stand back.
Quite new. And lastly, I wonder, have you had a chance to look at the latest political party funding disclosures to the Independent Electoral Commission?
That's a joke. It's an absolute joke. I think there was the ideology. You know, Chris, there's a lot of people that say the word intent. You know, the greatest intentions in the world doesn't always work out in practice. I mean, that's a fact. And I always look at people, you know, the stories that always interest me is the creators of the intent is always disappointed at the end. I can mention, I don't know if you saw that brilliant movie Oppenheimer about the person that actually created the atom bomb. And then the remorse.
No, I didn't see the movie.
Yeah, interesting movie. The fact that the person as a scientist created this and it ended to be an atom bomb, him himself went through an unbelievable period. the same man called Kalashnikov, you know, the man that created the AK-47. In his latter years, he admitted before his death that he created a machine that caused so much blood and pain. So the intent of things are sometimes good, but the implementation sucks. Not good. This is the IEC trying to say that we need to regulate campaign funding for parties that contribute. It didn't work that way. The money still went on. Funny enough, one of the parties that got away with it is the EFF. When asked, please do your disclosures. MK, their IEC disclosures. I then knew, just because we were a party that partook, we didn't have to disclose our 14,000 rand. But, you know, there were parties that were sitting with gabillions and they didn't declare it. They didn't have to because they knew the system. And then there was a change, I think you know, within the IEC understanding, and that's not been solidified yet. So big question, if you look at people's theories, allegedly, because we must be very careful on this Sunday show, that we don't say anything on record that cannot be proven by law or by hard fact. This show does hundreds of hours to ensure that if someone says, you said that, can you prove it? People say that people got money from there, and they got money from there, and they got money from there. How did they get that money? How did the people from Russia, allegedly, get that money in the country? How? So there's question marks that the IEC and their regulatory system is a failure. It's not working. And the other one was there was a benchmark that if you get any donation from 100,000 rand and more, only then must you declare. So then I get 99999 into my bank account. But all I need to do is put 99,999 rand because not 100,000 rand. And that is what has happened. The people did that. They did 12, 14, 18, 30 transactions of 99999. So the system's not perfect. But even if it is, people will still find dubious way to fund parties. And because this is worry. If foreign countries are funding domestic parties, this is worrying, and I'm telling you, I for not 1 minute don't think that is happening. I know it's happening. It must. Makes common sense. It was spoken about. So how do we do it? Well, the IEC has to draw the line. It's either a free fall or we all stick to the rules, and I think that's difficult in this way. We hope they sort it out and that there is a finding of how it will work into the future. Otherwise, Chris, this poor little country will remain the badminton ball between all foreign states and we will never have our sovereignty.
Neil, I know you're not feeling well from chemo and that you were very brave to come on the show today. So I thank you. Our viewers will be delighted to hear your opinions today. And they will be delighted to hear that we are going to make this a much longer show by popular demand and by decree of BizNews founder Alec Hogg. But we'll do that from next Sunday on before we take a couple of Sundays off over Christmas and New Year. So thank you for being with BizNews today.
Douglas, I want to say something, if I may. This is my third round with cancer. I've never hidden away. Currently, I have lung and liver cancer. I had my second round of chemo Friday. I want to tell you something, if I may.
Of course.
Life is not a guarantee. You know, everybody dreams of so much. So much you want to do and achieve. And I'm a granddad and a dad. I was not always a perfect man. I was not always a straight and narrow human being. But for the past couple of years, when I have faced death three times now and saved three times to get up out of hospital and walk, when people ask me, do I do this, what I do with you for politics or score points or become politically relative, all I can tell them is, no. I love the truth. I love it now more than ever. I love the opportunity to be able to talk to the country. I love the fact that I love my country and that I know that my glass and sand is running out. Mine just a bit more than others. So, Chris, I want to tell you and the Biz News people out there, I love this program, but more than that, I'm in love with my country. And all I do here, this opportunity I've been given, is to take 30, 40 years of experience in intelligence, safety, security, the dealing with governance, and to bring this country the truth, only the truth to help me back. I am in a fight, but this fight is made better by all of you. So as though I don't have the energy of body, this program gives me the opportunity of energy of life. So thank you, Kristen. We'll be here every Sunday. Ons gaat hulle gatte krap, ons gaat hulle hart moer, and we will never back off from the truth. And that is why I'm here. So thank you for the opportunity. Cancer is not me. It is something that I have to fight. And a last word to every cancer survivor and to every survivor of the family that had to survive the losing of a person in cancer. It is and was last week Cancer Day for me. So here's a word. Don't live to die. Live to live. And once we have the opportunity to get up and live, that's grace. So thank you. I just needed to end it up with that. And thank you, Chris. But forget any sadness, forget anything we have. Remember one thing. We have a beautiful country. We just have bad management. And if we can get the bad management done, we can back and get our wonderful country. May God bless you. Thank you very much. And I look forward to the new show, which you will advertise this week, so that we can bring more truth and more accountability. Akabarai.
Thank you, Neil. That was Neil de Beer, the brave president of the United Independent Movement, on his Sunday show with Biz News. And I am Chris Stane.